Digital Lunchbox. Today I'm joined by Josh, VP of Sales and Marketing, and Andy, VP of Digital Marketing, to discuss geotargeting. Geotargeting refers to the practice of using geographic location as a means to filter the target audience of content. So it can be used in your website, and it's an essential tool for targeted marketing and advertising programs. So we're going to dive into that, and then you can definitely follow up with us if you want any more information. But with that, I will start with you, Josh. So what is the difference between geotargeting and geofencing?
Yeah, thanks, Hadley. So in a sense, geotargeting is more of like a category, and geofencing is a specific tactic within that category. So geotargeting, and I'll pull up an image here for people to look at. Geotargeting in general is just simply using that, wherever that geographic location is of a user, to target something. We certainly talk about it more in the digital sense of the term, in that, you know, we're using a paid search campaign or a programmatic media campaign or something like that to target people in Minnesota or the United States or just the Twin Cities or some region like that. Whereas it's certainly applicable in the broader scope of marketing as well. And, you know, I think traditional advertising, when you're sending out a mailer, you're picking a geography that you're sending that mailer to, or you're sending it through a newspaper that has a certain distribution. So all advertising and marketing has geo-targeting built into it. In fact, if you're not doing any specific geo-targeting, you're targeting the world, which is its own geo-target. So in a way, everybody geo-targets all the time. But so geo-targeting is the category. Geo-fencing is a tactic which you use to create a specific location in which you want to tag devices in. So as an example, we'll talk more about this in detail later, but things like I want to target a specific competitor's location or people that visit my office building or something to that effect. So, and there's another technology actually called beaconing, which we'll refer back to later as well.
Okay, and so Andy, what geotargeting capabilities does a major ad system like Google have?
So if you open up Google Ads, or for that matter, Facebook Ads, LinkedIn, they're all going to have very similar types of capabilities. They present them in slightly different ways. So you're going to have the opportunity to target by region, by city, by country. In LinkedIn, you can even target political entities or geographic, you know, broad geographic entities. So in LinkedIn, you can actually say, I want to target APAC, you know, Asia Pacific region, or I want to target EMEA, Europe, Middle East and Africa, or the European Union. Whereas in Google tends to be a little bit more country by country. You can't just say I want Latin America. You've got to really go and kind of figure out which countries are in or out of your targeting. Most of them for US users will default to the United States kind of initially. They all require some kind of initial targeting. So if you're not going to do the United States, you are essentially targeting, as Josh said, you're targeting the world, whether you know it or not. But all of them have this, and then we'll get into it a little bit more detail, but they also give you some finer grained opportunities to not only include but exclude regions, and also to target by radius, which can be really useful to target multiple regions at the same time.
So Josh, let's talk a little bit more about like Google versus Facebook. Are there any differences in geotargeting between those platforms?
There are some distinctions between them, but quite frankly, they're pretty small at this point in time. If you go back a few years, there were some vast differences, but the technology has kind of caught up across the platform. So really, I think that where the most differences come into play now aren't really on the geotargeting level, but they're on the demographic and psychographic and behavioral type of level. So for instance, with Facebook, because they have your profile information, they have the ability to add a lot more different types of targeting based on the specific information that you've provided to Facebook. And similarly with Google, they have, Google's tracking most people everywhere they go and have ability to add in targeting based on that as well. So, and then even you could bring in something like LinkedIn, which, has the basic levels of geo-targeting, but has things like job title and company that you work for and things like that. So from a geo-targeting perspective, there is a lot of alignment there. Though there are things like, Facebook has this thing called free trade areas that you can target, which quite frankly, I've never had a client or company ever even ask about, let alone want to use. Google has things like university systems where you can target the campus of the University of Minnesota, for instance, because it's kind of got that defined as one of its targeted settings. But essentially it's it's mostly the same across the board.
So then how accurate is geotargeting, Andy?
So that's not as accurate as it used to be, in part because, again, this depends. If we're talking about targeting, geotargeting using mobile devices, then pretty accurate because your mobile device has really got it within a short radius of where you are. Have you ever looked at your location on a map, on Google Maps, and you sort of see like, well, I'm standing on this corner and it thinks I'm 100 feet down or whatever, but you're still pretty close. And it's using satellite position and GPS data to get that. If you're talking about desktop targeting, which in a lot of cases with advertising you are, or it's a mix, Google is using IP addresses, and IP addresses are notoriously unreliable because the IP address sometimes isn't where you are, it's where your internet service provider is. It used to be a little more reliable if you're targeting people at work and they've got a corporate IP address, then you're probably pretty accurate. It's not going to matter too much, honestly, if you're targeting by an entity like a state or something regional or within the United States, then you're probably going to be fine. But you're going to have to accept that a certain amount of it is not going to be accurate. The other thing about that accuracy, and Josh, if you could pull up slide two, it's not just what region you're targeting, but it's also who you're targeting. So it's who, not just where. So when you pull up Google Ads, for example, you see this default. It'll just default to the United States when you start targeting. If you're in the US, I assume if you're outside, I haven't tried this, but if you're outside, it probably pull up your home country. Mm-hmm. But then it's actually the piece below when you look at these location options where it's giving you the ability to target. You see where it's defaulting. It's targeting people who are in or regularly in your target location sets. Okay, that's probably really where you mostly want to be. They're recommended as people who are in or who show interest in your targeted locations. That may not be, even though that's recommended, it's recommended for them because it potentially expands the audience, but that may not be what you want. You really are trying to, if you're trying to distinguish between people who live in your location versus people who are mostly interested in it, and then the third is people who are searching. And that's the same for exclusions. You can see that below, people in your excluded locations versus people who are in or show interest in your excluded locations. Generally speaking, if you're targeting, it's people, I want the people who are physically there, and I want to exclude the people who are physically not there. So generally, you're going to want to pay attention to those settings and make sure they actually reflect what you are doing. And the same as you can see on Facebook. Similarly, it's people in Facebook's case, they give people living in or recently in this location, and that can be useful as well. So if you think that someone was just recently shopping someplace, but then they left, you can assume that you can still go after them. And they were just there, or they were there in the recent past. I don't know how far back the recency goes, but that is an option that Facebook gives you that Google does not. So pay attention to the who, not just the where.
Okay.
And if I may, Hadley, just to add on that whole accuracy thing, certainly over the last couple of years, we have different programmatic vendors or data vendors that are talking about their level of accuracy. And I've even had people say, literally at your front door and the sidewalk in front of it is their accuracy level. I've yet to see that really be proved out with anything. One of the challenges that accuracy has is on a vertical level. Where if you're trying to target people who like enter a specific location, we'll talk more about that with geofencing, and you're on the second floor of a building and there's four floors, the level of accuracy there is, it's very difficult for it to get the verticality of it. So there's some challenges there if that's something that a company has to deal with.
Yeah, okay. So to compare and contrast like different options a little bit more, which geotargeting options are the best to use in which situations then, Andy?
So again, you hate to hear this answer, it depends, but it really depends on where are the people and what are you actually trying to accomplish. So a real standard way you could do it is I want to target people just in this state, or state of Minnesota, for example, or state of Wisconsin, or I want to target people within a region, multi-state region, that's real common. often you just want people in a metro area, and Google has that nicely broken down. You can target people in a metro area such as Chicago, Orlando, or Minneapolis, or New York, wherever. You can also use direct marketing association DMA regions that are already predefined that are going to be in sync with other kinds of advertising that you might be doing. So that can be useful if you're, say, doing something cross-channel, you're doing, say, TV or radio advertising, and you're advertising to DMA within DMA regions, and then or doing mailings, and then you also want to have that in sync with your targeted digital. The other thing that you can do is you can target multiple. You know, you can target more than one at the same time. It's not like I have to just pick a radius around the Twin Cities. So imagine a situation where you've got, so here, the first one is a real simple case on the left. You've got, I just want to target people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the surrounding metro area and suburbs. So Google's pretty good. This is actually from Facebook, but it's the same basic premise. You just simply say Minneapolis and give me a 25 or 50 mile radius around the Twin Cities, and I'm basically done. But what if you also want to target some surrounding communities? Let's say it's Minneapolis, but it's also sort of central and southern Minnesota. I've got, and maybe even going into western Wisconsin, I want to target some of these areas that are kind of within driving range of Minneapolis, but I don't necessarily need to get everybody in between. It's really certain metro areas. You can see that drop pin is an option where you can just drop a pin into each of these areas and then just describe a radius around them.
Okay.
So those are all good targeting options. You've got a lot of flexibility, a lot of granularity with this. It was a while ago, Google actually even gave you the ability to draw sort of polygons that are regularly shaped borders and so forth. You could get very, very specific. Unfortunately, that's been sunsetted, but this type of selection where you can pinpoint certain areas and then just go at a radius around them, you know, it's going to work fine. You can also target by county, by zip code. There's a lot of different ways that you can get at that depending on, you know, what you're marketing and who you're trying to reach.
Right. So I mentioned earlier when we started that you can use geotargeting also for your website. So can you talk to me more about that, Andy?
So, you know, again, sort of thinking about how you're going to personalize content for people, you know, maybe mm-hmm. the kind of classic example is, let's say that you have a website and it's fashion, or it's you're selling clothing, shoes, boots, whatever that is, and it's the month of November, so, or December. If you have visitors from, say, Florida, they may have a very different kinds of fashion needs and footwear needs than people who are up north. And so theoretically, you wouldn't want to show them the same stuff. You would want to be able to filter them by IP, figure out their location, and then and hopefully have other cookie data on them as well, but and building personalized profiles of these visitors. But at the very least, if you can segment people by location, you can personalize your pages to send them to or serve up certain calls to action. So the web experience can be very different based on something as simple as geography. Obviously, it can be a lot of other, you've got other demographics and other aspects that you can base it on. You can base it on their behavior, which pages they visit, et cetera. But geography is one of the ways that you can potentially target and personalize a web experience.
And I've certainly seen from an e-commerce perspective with things like taxes from different states and or different regions, or if there are, if you're a business that does work internationally, you may have products that are not simply not available in certain countries and potentially not even legal in certain countries, depending on your industry. So you can use geo-targeting capabilities of the web content for that as well.
One caution when you're talking about personalizing videography, it's kind of a fun trick to say, oh, hello there, fellow Minnesotan or whatever. And that can actually be kind of fun. But there's also, if it's done wrong, there can be a bit of a creep factor. It's like, oh, what else are you spying on?
You know too much, right?
Yeah, there's just a little bit of a, it's a little uncanny sometimes when the website seems to know. Or then the other way where it's going from the IP and you're actually from Minnesota, but it thinks you're in Omaha, you know, so that can happen as well. So that can somewhat backfire. Generally, a good rule when you're thinking about that, kind of personalized response, UX on a website, or particularly where you're using geography, is to think about, will this be helpful to the person? Is this going to really, you know, in the case of taxes or, you know, providing a certain selection for a certain type of climate, is that going to make it make a difference for that person, make it a better experience, or are you just trying to be too clever by half?
Got it. So the time we have left, let's talk, just touch on geofencing capabilities.
Yeah, so again, with geofencing, if you think about it like in the very metaphorical sense, people are familiar with electric fences. Geofencing is kind of like that, a virtual electric fence. So you can do a lot of different things with it. As an example, you know, if you think of all those movies where criminals are getting sent home before their court date and they get to wear a little ankle bracelet, that's geofencing technology that says that device is going to trigger a warning if they go outside of this specific geofence location. For families nowadays, there's apps on phones where people can track their children and get notified if their child goes outside of a certain radius around their home or their city or something like that. So that technology exists today. We're not really talking about that for this DLB, but we're really more about the advertising side of it. So I'm going to share real quick just some brief information here. So the way geofencing essentially works is, you have this device, your mobile phone, and you take that with you in general wherever you go nowadays. And so on the back end of that device, some people are very familiar with how it works, most people are not, is that it's tracking where you go, which towers your signal being pinged off of, et cetera. And there's all these companies out there that are essentially owning that data of where your phone goes. And they're connecting that with what apps you use by partnering with things like, you know, the AccuWeather app or the WeatherBug app or anything like that, where when you download that app to your phone, you're giving permission for that app to track what your movements are. And so you'll get this pop up and some people might try to say, no, don't allow this. And then you get that nice little message from the app that says, well, then this won't work. And then you go, okay, well then allow it anyway. I tried. So that's essentially how these devices are being tracked and then that data is being shared. So like an example of how that can work. So I'm going to just skip over this slide here. So what you might want to do, for instance, is if you're a business, is you say, I want to target anybody that's been to my business, physically came into my store as an example, or visited my clinic or anything like that. So you do a geofence of your actual physical location of that people might visit. Mm-hmm. When people come there, that little tag is placed on your device that says, hey, this device has now been to your location. And then the different technologies work in slightly different ways, but you can do things like, okay, now that that device has been to my store, where does that device live? So you can actually get information that shows any device that came to your location, where does it sleep at night? Where does it spend, you know, 7 days a week between the hours of, you know, roughly 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. or something. And you can actually map out then where are all your customers across the country, across the local region or something like that. And you can also differentiate is to where the device actually goes to work, back in the days when most people went to the office at least. So you could actually say, you know, this device goes to this location for normally between, you know, 7 and 9 hours, Monday through Friday or something, and get that information. And then you can then take that data and use that to target people based on, hey, I want to target anybody that works in this specific city, if you're a credit union, for instance, or anybody, I want to target any device that's ever been to my location, like the example that you're looking at there. We've talked a lot about geo-targeting and how you may want to be very defined in your geographic region around your location. But if you're doing, say, a rebrand campaign or something, and you want to target all those people that have been to your store previously, you may want to target people that are outside of that region because they are aware of your brand because of previous use or something. So that's kind of the way some of the technology and the way geofencing works.
So that tag you mentioned, is that referred to as a beacon, or what is?
So beacons a little bit different. So beacons are actual like devices that you would put inside of a store or inside of a clinic or a hospital or a senior living facility or something like that. And that beacon will connect directly to an app. So it'll actually recognize, and beacons, when we talk about accuracy, are really meant for very close range activity. So someone's downloaded, say you download an app for a hospital, for instance, The app can actually identify that, or the beacon will identify, hey, there's somebody standing in line at the check-in counter because they're within 25 feet, and automatically send a message to their phone saying, hey, do you want to fill out your forms online while you're waiting? You know, something like that. You know, on the consumer side or retail side, you can think of, you know, you've gone to your favorite liquor store and you have the app for that liquor store, and you're walking down the aisle, and because you got within, you know, 3 meters of the end cap, where there's a display for this, you know, great brand of whiskey, you get a message on your phone that says this whiskey is on sale today. Pick up your bottle right here. You know, something like that. So beacons are much more hardware oriented and require more setup than a geofence, which can really be done with most you know, digital advertising programs.
Okay, and then just as a final question, I just want to ask, like, when's like a really good use case for geotargeting or using beacons?
Well, I'll actually say from a geotargeting perspective, I think everybody has a use case for geotargeting. And it's just a matter of how defined is that going to be.
Right.
For beacons, I think people have to be real intentional about when they would want to use them, because there's more hardware investment. It does require a user actually having an application or something like that. So again, I think that can work well with things like hospitals and maybe even banks that have, you know, registration information that they need to get. What I would say from a geofencing perspective, I think there is a lot of good use cases for that. I mentioned things like, you know, people retargeting people that have visited your physical location, but you can also do competitive locations. Say for instance, you're looking to hire more nurses, and there's a limited you know, pool out there of those, and many of them work at your competitors today. You can actually build geofences around your competitor, you know, a competitor clinic or hospital. And say, I want to target devices that work at that location, as an example, to maybe target those specific nurses, or a nursing school, for instance, where you know there are nursing students that are going to that nursing school, you can do that. Certainly other brands, like wellness brands, will target, you know, places where, like, you could imagine like the Boston Marathon or Twin Cities Marathon or something like that. You know, if you're a wellness brand trying to target people who are very active and into wellness, that could be a geofence that you would create to target people that were within that very specific geographic region on that very specific day.
Wow, fascinating stuff. Well, this was super interesting, and I think it's something that everyone can use, like you said, and everyone is using to an extent, so they probably should fine tune it. So we can definitely help out. If anybody has any questions, feel free to contact us, and we can kind of help walk you through it, give you some basics, or dive even deeper into the technical side of it. But in terms of Digital Lunchbox, we moved down to be on the first Tuesday of every month. So our next one is going to be November 3rd, and we're going to be discussing setting priorities and strategy for 2021. And I know we are all so ready for 2021. We're just done with 2020. So please join us.
2020 over with.
Yes. So please join us, and we can make sure that you get a strong kickoff to the new year, and we'll talk soon.